Chapter 8. Matthew chapter 8. So, got a question to begin with today. What do you call someone who talks a lot, says all kinds of things, some of them that you want to be true, and some of them that, you know, are almost too good to be true and almost unbelievable? And then he goes out, he or she goes out, and does none of those things. What do you call such a person? I heard a human. What did I hear over here?
Hypocrite.
I might say politician. You laughed at that, but that's because there's an element of truth there. Yeah, you know, a degree of truth. Well, Jesus Christ has just preached his sermon, and he has said all kinds of things. Some of them are hard to believe. Some of them you want to believe. But what you want to know is, can he follow through with what he said? You want him to not just be speaking as one who has authority. You want him to actually have that authority. And you need to know that. He's made a lot of claims that sounded good and some things that would set the religious establishment on its ear. And the crowds were amazed because he spoke as one having authority. And as human beings, we do tend to respond to one who speaks, at least acts like they have it all together, like they know what they're talking about. But we also want to know that they can back up their claims. And in the human world, maybe they do, maybe they don't. With politicians, maybe they do, usually they don't. But Matthew wants us to see that with Jesus Christ, he actually does. He has that authority. He has both the right and the power. Matthew, in writing his gospel, he wants us to see Jesus as Messiah and King. He wants us to see Jesus as the prophet that was to come, that God spoke of to Moses. He wants us to see Jesus for who he is. And remember, when we evaluate a teacher, we ask, what do they say? What do they do? Do those two things line up with each other? And more importantly, do they line up with Scripture? And we're going to see with Jesus, they absolutely do. Matthew shows us both. Jesus' words and his actions are true to himself and to the Scriptures. The next two chapters in Matthew, actually chapters 8 and 9, are divided up into sections. There are 9 miracles that are divided into sections of 3 miracles, followed by a short teaching on discipleship, and then another 3 miracles, and a short teaching on discipleship, and then another 3 miracles and teaching on discipleship. I'll repeat that, you know, a couple more times before we get to the end, because we're going to be in chapter 8 probably until January, sometime late January. Don't panic. There's a Christmas series in there, so there is a little bit of a break. But the first set we're going to begin today. And the first set, they all highlight Jesus' authority over disease, over our physical bodies. He's going to heal a leper. He's going to heal a centurion's servant. He's going to heal Peter's mother-in-law. And in keeping with some of the themes of the Sermon on the Mount, these three people, these three individuals, represent classes that would not have at all been near the top of Jewish society of the day. In fact, they would have been down right there at the bottom of the social scale. Lepers, Gentiles, and women were not well thought of. But Jesus has maintained from the beginning that the kingdom is available to those who will believe. Those who will believe and follow, regardless of their demography, regardless of social status. Whosoever believes. So in exercising this authority, Jesus is demonstrating for us that he is who he is, for any who will see. So the title of the message today is "With Authority." We're seeing his authority, cleansing a humble leper, Matthew 8, verses 1 through 4. Let me read them. When Jesus came down from the mountain, large crowds followed him. And a leper came to him and bowed down before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, "I am willing, be cleansed." And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, "See that you tell no one, but go show yourself to the priest and present the offering that Moses commanded as a testimony to them." So before we talk about this miracle in depth, we really should have some understanding of what leprosy was in ancient Israel. Because it's not something that we see a lot today in the United States. Leprosy isn't a disease that we feel like we're in a lot of danger of catching today. So a few things about leprosy I wanted to start with. The term leprosy in the New and Old Testament probably refers to any infectious skin disease, including but not limited to what we would know today as Hansen's disease. Hansen's is leprosy. So the word could include things like psoriasis and dermatosis, ringworm, that sort of thing. Any disease of the skin that was contagious. But any sort of infectious disease in the first century would be a problem. It would be a real problem because they were lacking, you know, the medical knowledge that we have today. They were certainly lacking vaccines and treatments. The fear, of course, is that any infectious disease would spread and actually become Hansen's disease, which is a particularly horrible and physically revolting condition. Hansen's leprosy is caused, just a little history, it's caused by a bacterium that works slowly. The bacterium works slowly through your body, so you live with it for a long time. You can live with it for a long time. And it produces discoloration patches on the skin. These patches become black and scaly. The skin dries up and becomes thick and stiff. Ulcers can develop. Numbness follows. The face will swell. You can get lumps and boils on the face and in other parts of the body. You can lose your eyebrows and your eyelashes. Those things fall out. Muscles weaken. Noses bleed more frequently. And the blood supply to your outer extremities slows down or stops to the point that there's no oxygen getting out there, and the flesh will begin to die and kind of rot and then fall off if it's not amputated before then. This leaves a person disfigured. And often because of the nerve damage that accompanies the lack of oxygen, you know, a person with Hansen's or leprosy won't feel an injury. Like they could bump into a table and cut their hand, never feel it. And if they don't look at it, they don't treat it. And of course, that's not good because it just festers and then it grows from that point on, contributing to the loss of body parts. You can become blind also. And there's actually because there's flesh on you that's rotting, there's an unpleasant odor that you emit once you have leprosy. It was once thought to be highly, highly contagious. We know now that it's not as contagious as was first thought, but it is still contagious, and it can be controlled by medication today, and today it is controlled by medication. It's partially why in the West you really don't hear about it so much anymore. But in those days, it was absolutely feared. And the law of Moses had two chapters in Leviticus, and they are not short chapters, entirely devoted to the situation of leprosy. So we're actually going to turn to Leviticus chapter 13, please. Hold your finger in Matthew 8, we'll come back, but turn in your Bibles to Leviticus 13. I want to read a section of it. I want to read a fairly lengthy section of it, so you'll want to be following along with me. Leviticus 13:1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, when a man has on the skin of his body a swelling or a scab or a bright spot, and it becomes an infection of leprosy on the skin of his body, then he shall be brought to Aaron the priest or to one of his sons, the priests. The priest shall look at the mark on the skin of the body, and if the hair in the infection has turned white and the infection appears to be deeper than the skin of his body, it is an infection of leprosy. When the priest has looked at it, he shall pronounce him unclean. Focus on that word unclean for a moment and think about what that meant in ancient Israel to be unclean. He's pronounced unclean. Apparently the white hair in the sore is one of the giveaways. But if the bright spot is white on the skin of the body, and it does not appear to be deeper than the skin, and the hair on it has not turned white, then the priest shall isolate him who has the infection for 7 days. The priest shall look at him on the seventh day, and if in his eyes the infection has not changed, and the infection has not spread on the skin, then the priest shall isolate him for 7 more days. So a total of 14 now. The priest shall look at him again on the seventh day, and if the infection is faded and the mark is not spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. It is only a scab, and he shall wash his clothes and be clean. But if the scab spreads farther on the skin after he has shown himself to the priest for his cleansing, he shall appear again to the priest. And the priest shall look, and if the scab has spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is leprosy. I actually wouldn't want to be a priest in those days, you know, come to think of it. This would not be the best part of the job. When the infection of leprosy is on a man, then he shall be brought to the priest. The priest shall then look, and if there is white swelling in the skin and it has turned the hair white and there is quick raw flesh in the swelling, it is a chronic leprosy on the skin of his body, and the priest shall pronounce him unclean. And he shall not isolate him, for he is unclean. He doesn't have to go into an isolation period where it comes back. He's just unclean. If the leprosy breaks out further on the skin, and the leprosy covers all the skin of infection from his head even to his feet, as far as the priest can see, then the priest shall look, and behold, if the leprosy has covered all his body, he shall pronounce him clean. Him who has the infection, it is all turned white, and he is clean. If it happens quickly and the whole body is covered, Hansen's typically doesn't do that. So if the whole body is covered, it happens quickly. It's not leprosy as we understand it. It's something else. So he wasn't necessarily unclean. But, verse 14, wherever raw flesh appears on him, he shall be unclean. Open sores. The priest shall look at the raw flesh, and he shall pronounce him unclean. The raw flesh is unclean. It is leprosy. Or if the raw flesh turns again and is changed to white, then he shall come to the priest, and the priest shall look at him, and behold, if the infection is turned to white, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. Who has the infection? He is clean. If the thing is healing itself, then it's not Hansen's. When the body has a boil on its skin, and it is healed, and in the place of the boil, this is nice stuff for Sunday morning, right? We're having a meal after this. Yeah. I really didn't plan it that way. It is a white swelling or a reddish white bright spot, then it shall be shown to the priest. And the priest shall look, and behold, if it appears to be lower than the skin, deep, and the hair on it has turned white, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is the infection of leprosy. It has broken out in the boil. But if the priest looks at it, and behold, there are no white hairs in it, and it is not lower than the skin, and is faded, then the priest shall isolate him for 7 days. And if it spreads further on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It's an infection. But if the bright spot remains in its place and does not spread, it is only the scar of the boil, and the priest shall pronounce him clean. Or if the body sustains in its skin a burn by fire, and the raw flesh of the burn becomes a bright spot, reddish, white, or white, then the priest shall look at it, and if the hair in the bright spot is turned white and it appears to be deeper than the skin, it is leprosy. It is broken out in the burn. Therefore the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is an infection of leprosy. But if the priest looks at it, and indeed there is no white hair in the bright spot, and it is no deeper than the skin, but is dim, then the priest shall isolate him for 7 days. And the priest shall look at him on the 7th day. If it spreads further on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is an infection of leprosy. But if the bright spot remains in its place and is not spread in the skin, but is dim, it is the swelling from the burn, and the priest shall pronounce him clean, for it is only the scar or the burn. You notice everything they have to go through to determine what this is? Now, if a man or woman has an infection on the head or on the beard, then the priest shall look at the infection, and if it appears to be deeper than the skin, and there is thin yellowish hair in it, the yellow hair is a dead giveaway, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a scale. It is leprosy of the head or of the beard. But if the priest looks at the infection of the scale, and indeed it appears to be no deeper than the skin, and there is no black hair in it, then the priest shall isolate the person with the scaly infection for 7 days. On the 7th day, the priest shall look at the infection, and if the scale has not spread and no yellowish hair has grown in it, and the appearance of the scale is no deeper than the skin, then he shall shave himself, but he shall not shave the scale, and the priest shall isolate the person with the scale 7 more days. They're very careful with this. Then on the 7th day, the priest shall look at the scale, and if the scale has not spread in the skin, and it appears to be no deeper than the skin, the priest shall pronounce him clean, and he shall wash his clothes and be clean. But if the scale spreads farther in the skin after his cleansing, then the priest shall look at him. And if the scale has spread in the skin, the priest need not seek for the yellowish hair. He is unclean. If in his sight the scale has remained, however, and the black hair has grown in it, the scale has healed. He is clean, and the priest shall pronounce him clean. When a man or woman has bright spots on the skin of the body, even white spots, bright spots, then the priest shall look, and if the bright spots on the skin of their bodies are a faint white, it is eczema, that is broken out on the skin, he is clean. So they had some idea of that. They were distinguishing the bad part from the good part, or what's, you know, acceptable and what's not, what's contagious and what's not. Now, if a man loses the hair of his head, he is bald. He is clean.
Amen.
Yeah. Well, we know what to say to them. But if his head becomes bald at the front of and sides, he is bald on the forehead, he is clean. But if on the bald head or the bald forehead there occurs a reddish-white infection, it is leprosy breaking out on his bald head or on his bald forehead. Then the priest shall look at him, and if the swelling of the infection is reddish-white on his bald head or on his bald forehead, like the appearance of leprosy in the skin of the body, he is a leprous man. He is unclean. The priest shall surely pronounce him unclean. His infection is on his head. As for the leper who has the infection, his clothes shall be torn. Listen to this. His clothes shall be torn, and the hair of his head shall be uncovered. And he shall cover his mustache and cry, "Unclean! Unclean!" He shall remain unclean all the days during which he has the infection. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. Now, the rest of Leviticus 13 talks about what to do if there's a spot of this on someone's garment. We won't read all of that. But turn back now to Matthew chapter 8. I wanted you guys to have a feel for how important and serious this was in both the Old and New Testaments. Verses 44 to 46, or 45 to 46 in Leviticus are really what I was keying on. He is unclean. An infectious skin disease, and you're considered unclean, which means you can't be around anybody else. Wherever you went, you had to yell you were unclean to warn anyone else in the area that you were coming and you had this thing, so that they could, you know, avoid you. And I would imagine that they did. Pretty swiftly, they'd get out of the way and avoid you. And sometimes people and fear would actually throw stones at the lepers to drive them away. I'm not moving, you're moving, you just go away, so I'm going to throw things at you until you leave. That's how they were often treated. And then they have to, you know, uncover and cover. Did you notice they had to tear their clothes, uncover their heads, but they had to cover the upper lip where the mustache was? That had to be covered. And the reason for that is they'd want you to uncover your face so that everyone could see, so you couldn't like mix in with the crowd and hide this thing that you had it. They wanted people to see, but they didn't want you to breathe in on you. They want you to breathe on them, so you had to cover your upper lip here where the mustache is. Tearing the clothes was considered a sign of mourning. So there was a spiritual and emotional aspect to having leprosy. You were to avoid touching or breathing on anyone else. And you couldn't live where other people lived. You couldn't be around people. In Leviticus, they said outside the camp. In Israel in the first century, it's outside the town. Lepers didn't live in the towns. You had to live alone outside the town. Maybe you can gather in groups of other lepers. That's where you could live. So they were devoid of most social contact. Imagine what that might be like. Especially if you were Jewish, because you couldn't go to temple. You couldn't go to synagogue. You couldn't be part of the religious rituals of the day. You couldn't do that. They were outcasts. They were untouchables. And of course, there was also the thought that leprosy was God's curse for some sin in their lives, so that they were especially despised by the religious people of Israel. Leprosy was a disease that isolates, and not just in Israel. This is not specific to the Jewish people. All people groups that I know of handled this disease in a very similar way. They might not have had all the rituals, but they put you out and cut you out, and you were not allowed to belong anymore. You couldn't go near. That's why leper colonies developed at one time. The lepers would live together because they certainly couldn't live with anybody else. In 1993, I had the privilege to visit a leper colony in Cameroon, and it was the same. Now, it was interesting. Because the lepers came from different tribes, and the tribes didn't get along with each other, but the lepers didn't have a problem really getting along with each other. There's nothing like a common malady to overcome these things. But they were careful not to touch each other. They were careful not to touch you. They most of them wouldn't look you in the eye. They didn't want you to see them. And if they looked you in the eye, they knew that you saw them. They were embarrassed that we were there because they were embarrassed about what they had. They felt shame, loneliness, separation from their families, separation from their tribes. Now, there was joy there. Some knew Christ, and those who knew Christ, there was an unnatural joy about them, but that wasn't everybody. But for the most part, they just didn't want to be seen. And they were just existing until they died. As horrible as the physical effects of that disease are, the social emotional losses may be the worst aspect of it. And I wanted to do that because we don't really see leprosy very much anymore. I think as of 2022, I saw a statistic that said that there were about 208,000 cases of leprosy in the world. Most of them are concentrated in Africa and in India. But for us, most of us, outside of reading the Bible, or if we've watched Ben-Hur, you know, we really don't see it much. We don't hear about it. So I think we need to have this background in order to really better understand what's going on here in Matthew chapter 8, the scope of what Jesus has just done. So let's go back to Matthew 8, first verse. When Jesus came down from the mountain, large crowds followed him. Well, yeah, Jesus often had large crowds following him. He just preached this amazing sermon. People were excited, and they wanted to see what was next. But I'm taking this crowd statement here in verse 1 as sort of a summary statement. It's kind of like wherever Jesus went after this, large crowds followed him. But they weren't always there. Sometimes it was just Jesus and his disciples. And I think they weren't there. My guess is they weren't there by the time we get to verse 2. That verse 1 is just kind of a overall encompassing. Large crowds followed him, and then these things happened. These things happened as well. Because by the time we get to verse 2, and a leper came to him and bowed down before him, my question is, if there were large crowds, how did a leper get close enough to come before Jesus? They certainly wouldn't have let him. He wasn't to be in contact with people, and had they seen him, they for sure would have driven him away. So I don't even think the disciples would have let a leper get that close to Jesus if they'd have seen him coming a long way off. So this occurs likely not in a town. So if you got that mental image of it, it's not happening in a town. But on the road somewhere between towns, Jesus may have just had a few disciples with him. Or it's either that or Jesus was out in front of everybody by a distance, and the leper came out around the corner or came out from hiding someplace and got to Jesus before anybody else saw. One of those two things is what's happening. But I don't think there are that many people in close proximity to the leper and Jesus, other than maybe his closest disciples. So this leper comes out and bows down before him and says, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Even though this guy wasn't technically or legally supposed to approach Jesus, he does get something seriously right here. He comes before Jesus and he bows. He comes with the right attitude. The text says he bowed down before Jesus. Maybe he lay prostrate, but it's possible he just bowed very low before him. And it was a sign of respect. A sign of respect for Jesus' person and for his authority. This man who had been humbled by life had no problem humbling himself before the Lord. Maybe this is something we should note when we approach Jesus. Yeah, I know he's our brother. I know he's a friend that's closer, a brother that's closer than a friend. God is our daddy, but he's still God. And we should respect his authority, for he is the ultimate authority of, you know, everything, anything. And it took a bit of courage, I think. It took a bit of courage for this man to approach Jesus. I mean, most other Jewish scholars, Jewish teachers, Pharisees, scribes, they would have kept their distance and admonished this leper to keep his. Whoa, 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 whoa. Hey, back off. Back, pal. That's what the law says, right? That's what should have happened. But Jesus is different. But it's not in his bowing or in his coming that initially caught my attention in this verse. There is something that just jumped out off the page at me. And he calls him Lord too, and that wasn't what jumped off either, because a lot of people called him Lord, which probably in this case it could be a term of mere respect, but I think it's a little bit more. I don't know how much this leper knew, but he knew he was talking to someone who was more than just sir. It had to be more than sir. We don't know if he thought Jesus was a prophet or a powerful healer, or if he knew he was Messiah. The text doesn't allow us to make that determination, but he does recognize that Jesus has some power and authority here, because he doesn't ask Jesus if he can heal him. He comes saying, "I know you can. Are you willing? Will you heal me?" If you are willing, Jesus' ability to do what the man was asking wasn't in question. And there is a question here. You don't see a question mark in your Bibles. And he didn't phrase it in the form of a question. But the man wanted to be healed. He was asking to be healed. But he went about it saying, I know you can. Are you willing? If you will. This is not, you know, oh Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. No, it's not that. He's assuming Jesus can. How's that for faith? He's got faith in something. I'm not saying it's saving faith here, but he's got faith in something. And what Jesus does, by the way, has nothing to do with the man's faith either. It's all about Jesus' will. Will he? But it seems to me that this statement of faith is kind of what the writer of Hebrews was talking about when he said on Hebrews 11:6, without faith it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. This man came believing that Jesus could do what he wanted him to do. He came believing that Jesus could cleanse him. And again, I can't underscore enough, we don't know the extent of his faith. I'm not saying saving faith, but he had some idea that Jesus had this authority and power. It's likely, I don't know how he knew about Jesus even, but it's likely that Jesus has performed other miracles by this point. These miracles in Matthew were not necessarily in chronological order. These are in order to make a point. Right now, Matthew is making the point that Jesus has authority and power over diseases. So, and then there'll be another theme for the next section and another theme for the section after that. So these are all, they're thematically put together, not necessarily chronological. So it's possible Jesus has been doing some other miracles and someone told this guy, probably another leper has told this guy because he wouldn't have had that much contact with other people. His faith is that Jesus can. The only question is Jesus willing? Which really, that should be like every prayer that we lift up. Every prayer that we lift up. We believe that Jesus can do what we're asking. And we're asking for him to be willing. It's a matter of his will. Is it within the will of God that what we want to happen actually happens? And sometimes God says no. Sometimes Jesus says no. You know, what you want is not what's best in the long run. And we must not only believe that he can, but we must trust him when he says no. Understanding that his wisdom is greater than ours. His authority is greater than ours. But we should approach him with, I know that you can. I know you can. Don't doubt. I know you can. But will you? Acknowledging that God has the right to act on or to refuse our requests honors him as God. It recognizes his sovereign authority. It's not a lack of faith. That's humility. And that's the right attitude. Of course, in this case, the answer is yes. The answer is yes. Jesus was willing. Verse 3. Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. Did you see that? Did you see what Jesus did there that was absolutely incredible? I'm not talking about the healing. I'm talking about the fact that he reached out and touched him. Jesus, he moves toward him. I don't know if he took a step. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But at the very least, he reached out his hand and he touched the man. That either one of those acts is shocking because you don't touch a leper lest you contract the disease. The law said you don't touch them. You don't. That's why they have to be kept away from everybody else. There's a parallel account in Mark chapter 1 that states that Jesus felt compassion for the man, and I believe it. I believe the reaching out and touching him was an act of both both an act of compassion and a demonstration of power, that he reached out. How long do you think it had been since this man had been touched by anybody? Since another human being had given this man the comfort of physical touch? Who knows? We don't know how long he had leprosy. But we know that since contracting leprosy, he probably hadn't been touched by anybody. And, you know, as we follow along, Jesus didn't actually need to touch him. The next miracle that he performs, one we'll talk about next week, he's not even physically in the same room with the person. Jesus can just speak and it happened. He didn't have to touch him, but he did. He intentionally reached out and touched the leper. And immediately the leprosy vanished. The term used here is cleansed, which is important because you would be considered unclean, so he was cleansed. The man was cleansed at a touch, and Jesus did not contract the disease. The man was cleansed because Jesus has the authority to do that. He has the authority to cleanse, and he demonstrated it right there. He has the power, and he has the right. And in ancient Israel, first century Israel, cleansing lepers was a big deal. It was a big deal. Not everybody did it. It was on par with raising the dead. This was a major thing. This wasn't a minor healing that was going on here. And lepers were considered to be as good as dead to others, isolated, alone, decaying, as good as dead. But Jesus is willing to be with them. Jesus is willing to touch them, and he's willing to cleanse them. That's really good news for us. That's really good news about Jesus. He is willing, and he has the authority. As I was studying this week, I really couldn't help but think of our recent experiences in the COVID-19 pandemic. And I think we can get a mulligan, because this was a confusing time, and you know, we hadn't had to deal with something like this since like 1918. But how were the elderly and the sick? How we quarantined the elderly and the sick? Was that less than humane? And I think in some cases it really was. And I'm just saying, we treated them like lepers. Culturally, they were treated like lepers. Maybe we need to pray about a way that we can minister to the sick and dying while still protecting others. You know, I think maybe next time, and there surely will be a next time. You know, we're not done with disease. Maybe, especially the church, maybe we can do better. Anyway, that's not the main point. That's just an aside. It's a little bonus here for an Agape Meal Morning. But it's not to be overlooked either. Verse 4. And Jesus said to him, "See that you tell no one, but go, show yourself to the priest and present the offering that Moses commanded as a testimony to them." That's interesting. Jesus tells the man, he's just performed this miracle. It's a major miracle. And he tells this man, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody, but go show yourself to the priest. Now, why? Why did Jesus tell the man not to tell anyone? Now, I'm going to give you a list of some potential reasons why, and then I'm going to tell you what I think. Maybe he doesn't want to draw any more attention to himself than he already has. I mean, it's got to be getting difficult to minister with all these people following you around. That gets to be cumbersome and unwieldy. And maybe he doesn't want to draw any more people who are just drawn to miraculous signs, just people following, just waiting for the next spectacle. Maybe he doesn't want any more of those around. Maybe. Maybe it's not time to reveal himself, because it's not time for a confrontation with the Pharisees and the scribes. Maybe it's just a timing thing. It's not time for the Son of Man yet. Because once they get this, then that's going to escalate. Maybe. Maybe he doesn't want the man to get sidetracked telling people his story. Because though he is cleansed, Though he's been cleansed physically of the disease, he cannot be restored to Jewish society until he has seen the priest and been declared clean. He's got to make the offering prescribed by law. And I don't, it says the priest. I'm not sure where the priest is. Does that mean he had to go to Jerusalem? Or was there a priest available in Galilee that he could go to? It's kind of unclear there. But Jesus doesn't want him to waste any time. Because the full cleansing, being declared, that's where you get restored to society. Until the priest says so, you can't be restored to your place in Jewish society. You still have to remain isolated, even though you don't have the disease anymore. And I'll explain why that is in just a couple minutes. And there also might be the factor that if the priest heard ahead of time Jesus did it, that maybe he might be less inclined to actually declare him clean. That has been postulated. I'm not sure I'd put a lot of weight in that. There may be parts or even all of those things in Jesus' mind at this point. But the one I lean on is this. Leviticus 14 prescribes a process that takes 8 days. You have to go to the priest. You can read the whole thing on your own time. I won't make us read more Leviticus today. But you had to go to the priest. The man brings two birds as an offering. One gets killed, the other gets set free. The man has to bathe, he has to wash his clothes, he has to shave, he stays outside the camp or up outside the town for 7 days. And then on the 8th day, he brings, you know, two lambs and a grain and an oil offering to the priest. Sacrifices are made. Blood is smeared on the man's right ear, right thumb, right ear, and right big toe. Oil was sprinkled before the Lord, and then oil was put on the right earlobe and on the right thumb and on the right big toe and on the head. And then there's a burnt offering made. I'm summing up an entire chapter here. There's a burnt offering made. And if the man is poor, then there are lesser options. But it still takes 8 days to do. There's a whole thing that needs to be gone through. And then the priest will declare him clean before God. What's happened here is Jesus cured the disease, but the cleansing wasn't complete until the law of Moses was upheld. Because Jesus has not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. He was making that point. I've not come to abolish it, but to fulfill it. This was black letter law written in the book of Leviticus. Jesus wasn't providing a workaround for that at this point. There was still a sacrifice, and this is key, there was still a sacrifice involved in being declared clean, and Jesus hadn't done it yet. The cross hadn't happened yet. In order to uphold the law, there needed to be a sacrifice, so the man had to go to the priest. Jesus was careful to uphold the law. He was. His whole life, he was careful to uphold the law. Not necessarily the man-made things surrounding the law, but the law God had written himself. Jesus didn't break, and he wasn't going to break it. The cross hadn't happened yet, so those sacrifices were still necessary at this point. We are saved by his death, burial, and resurrection on the cross. Belief in that. We're not saved by his life, his presence. We're saved by belief in what he did there. So, and that's what I think he meant as a testimony to them. Them would have been odd if you're talking about the priest, because the priest is singular and them is obviously plural. He's talking about the priest, the priests, the Pharisees, the scribes, and all the people who you're going to tell and who may have even been there seeing it. They all need to see as a testimony, I'm fulfilling the law, not replacing it. He came to fulfill it. I'm not in opposition to God's law, Jesus is saying. I'm not in opposition to Moses, God's spokesman in Leviticus. I am in opposition to sin and to those who think they can earn God's favor simply by law keeping. Legally, under the law, for this leper to be accepted back into society, he needed to go show the priest and he needed to go make those offerings. And Jesus wasn't going to tell him otherwise. And in demonstrating this, well, let me back up a minute. I missed a whole paragraph. Sadly, if this is the same guy that is in Mark's gospel in Mark chapter 1, if this is the same situation, he didn't listen. He went out and told everybody. And I mean, you know, I get that. You know, I probably would be excited too, telling everybody. But it would have been better had he just listened to Jesus. And maybe that's a little warning for us too. The faith to come to Jesus is great. It's awesome that we do. But we also need the faith to obey. We need the faith to obey. And we shouldn't forget about him as soon as we get what we want. There's an obedience aspect to following him. But Jesus is making an announcement of sorts here. By healing the leper and especially by touching him, he's kind of declaring who he is. For anyone who cares to look at it, he's kind of declaring who he is here. Later on in Matthew, John's going to send some disciples to Jesus to ask, some of John's disciples, to ask him if he's the one who was to come or should we expect somebody else? Did I get it right or is there someone else coming? And Jesus answered them and he did this. He said this to them. Go and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them, and blessed is he who does not take offense at me. One of my seminary profs used to call this the calling card of the Messiah. These are some facts taken from the book of Isaiah that tell us what the Messiah will be doing when he comes. Jesus is saying, okay, here I am, cleanse the leper. Check that box. Keep watching. See what it looks like. This is how you're going to recognize Messiah. He's going to be doing these things. Jesus is him. Jesus is the Son of God with the authority to forgive sins and to cleanse. And the final thing I'd say this morning about this passage as we prepare for the Lord's table is that leprosy in Scripture is often symbolic for sin. The horrible and destructive way leprosy infects, warps, and disfigures the body is very similar to how sin infects, warps, and disfigures us spiritually. But Jesus has the authority to cleanse. And he has made the sacrifice now, the cleansing sacrifice. Again, he's got both the right and the power to cleanse us of the guilt of our sin. But we have to come to him like this man and ask him if he's willing. The good news is, this is why 1 John 1:9, by the way, you know, if you confess your sins, he is faithful and just to forgive and to cleanse us of all unrighteousness. The good news is, Jesus stands willing today. Whether you have never come to him at all, or whether you're one of like me and you're having to come to him all the time to ask forgiveness for something that you've done, Jesus is standing there willing to cleanse you, willing to forgive. We need to come. We need to ask. And that's really good news. That's really, 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 really good news. That Jesus is willing, no matter who you are or what you have done, regardless of what kind of spiritual leper you and I actually are, Jesus is willing and he has the power. All that stuff that some of us are holding on to and feeling guilty about, all that grime that we slog through that dirties us, there's nothing you've done that he can't cleanse you from. There's nothing you can think of or do that he can't forgive. And he stands there willing. So for us, it's how willing are we to come to him? So as we're contemplating the Lord's table, each of us should remember and should, you know, one of the things we should think about is that you're standing before God as a sinner. You're standing before God as a sinner. You are a sinner. You are a disfigured spiritual leper. You are worse off than you think that you are. But Jesus is willing to forgive and to cleanse. You are also more loved than you can ever imagine. Jesus died on that cross to be that sacrifice for your sin. And he asks us to believe and to trust. And that means faith to come to him initially for salvation. And that means the faith to keep on coming when we fall, because we do, and ask him to be cleansed over and over and over again of the things that we've done. That's not losing salvation, by the way. That's simply confessing and restoring fellowship. And there's a difference between restoring fellowship and losing salvation. Once saved, always saved. You can't lose your salvation. But your fellowship, your walk, will be interrupted by the sin that we get into daily. So let's bow our heads and just reflect on who Jesus is and who we are. Just spend a couple moments doing that, and Brother Paul will come forward for communion.